Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Meet the Author. Denny Griffin here, and for the next half hour, I'll be your host. And today, my guest is Roger Storkamp. Roger has a series called Ladies of the Road. Ladies of the Road novels are Thelma Quilt, Neath the Crescent Moon, and the soon-to-be-released Miss West. In addition to his books, Roger will discuss a recent literary phenomenon, the hobo novel. And later in the program, Roger will explain how today's listeners can obtain one of his ladies cost-free to send down the hobo trail. Roger, welcome to Meet the Author.
Oh, thank you, Denny. Yes, welcome and good morning to you, too.
Well, thank you very much. And do you want to tell us a little bit about your series here, the Ladies of the Road novels?
Okay, the Ladies of the Road came out of the fact that I came up with the idea of the hobo novel, and the fact that the gender tended to be female. The books were written from a male point of view, as disguised as a female point of view. Sometimes I'm successful with it, and sometimes people say, oh, the male is peeking through. But I generally tend to think of my books as ladies, and if they're hobos, they have to be ladies of the road.
Okay, when did you start writing your first one?
Okay, I retired in the year 2000. It had a lot of zeros in it, and I decided I was never going to work again another year that had a zero in it.
Okay.
Now, my next employment should be in the year 2111, I believe.
Okay.
That's my favorite little joke. My friends are getting tired of hearing it. I guess the most critical factor in my background as related to my writing is the fact that I grew up in rural Minnesota. They say you can take the boy out of Minnesota, but you just can't take Minnesota out of the boy. Growing up in rural Minnesota, small parochial community, Catholic specifically, but parochial nonetheless, and rural German heritage, mostly second, third, sometimes fourth generation German families. And it's from these that I gathered all the foibles and all the different personalities of my characters. Some of the characters are even real, but these stories are become very fictitious. I grew up in the 40s and 50s, graduated in 59, and left Minnesota in 59. Actually, I didn't leave Minnesota. I left Bovine, and I left my little hometown, and went on to college, and then I went on to be a career as a teacher for 35 years. And about that time, when I was looking at retirement, the year 2000 was approaching, and I had made my commitment. I returned, not that I hadn't visited before, but I returned to my hometown with some questions in my mind about whether I should actually move back there or what. And it was at that time that I realized I really had something special with that town. Not special enough that I would want to move back there, but special enough that I knew it would never leave me. Just my family, siblings were still there, and they reviewed for me a lot of my history and things that happened to various people. And it was about that time that I decided to write a novel about these people. And also I decided to do it someplace else. I decided to move out to Las Vegas, someplace quite foreign, quite far away from Minnesota. Left a family of siblings back there and also a family of two boys, adult children. And moved out to Las Vegas, and I enjoy ribbing them about staying in Minnesota in the cold weather. And, of course, they come out to visit me quite often. A couple years later, we were blessed with a little dog, a little mini doxy, a miniature dachshund. And a year after that, my father-in-law joined us. So now we're a family of four, and I'm busy writing my third novel. All of this in the last 8 years.
So you've been busy in retirement.
Oh, yeah, I do a few other things in Las Vegas. It's hard not to, just in the city that it is.
It certainly is.
So I divide my time between the casinos and the churches. I belong to a church choir, and I do a Bible study. I had to throw that in so you know I wasn't just sinning out here.
Okay. sinless Sin City.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me ask you a question, Roger, about the, is it bovine or bovine?
It's bovine, which is, of course, the cow. Bovines are cattle.
That's the town without a zip code.
Yes. At that time, of course, the zip code wasn't common anyhow. But by today, if a town were able to get by without a zip code, it would have to be, there's another town like it, of course. Lake Wobegon doesn't have a zip code either. And I hate to say that I'm trying to steal things from Garrison Keillor, but I suppose in a sense I am. It's a fictitious town that I made up based on my own hometown. The town is Piers, Minnesota, P-I-E-R-Z. I'm unabashed about admitting to my people back home that Bovine is a representative of their town, and I don't hide that. Actually, in my creation here, the town used to be called Skunk Hollow, and how the name Bovine came about was kind of an interesting, at least by my perception, an interesting thing. And in the year of 1888, now I chose that year because on the church I went to back in my hometown, there was a big chipped up sign saying, or an engraved sign saying, established 1888. So I thought, well, that's a wonderful year for me to start my town. And it was called Skunk Hollow before that, and when they were going to convert it into a town, the men, not the women, of course, just the men got together at one of their town meetings, and they discussed if anything, should be changed about the name. And there was a newcomer who said that Skunk Hollow was a pretty negative-sounding name. As a matter of fact, he said, someday when we get a post office in this town, Skunk Hollow is going to be on every one of the postal stamps for our friends who live outside of our community. And one of my characters stood up and said, whoever has such kind of friends? Anyhow, they started talking about calling it Cow Town because it was a dairy town, and this newcomer insisted that this is not that kind of a cow, that these are just strictly bovines. And about that time, a little bit of a riot erupted, so the chairman banged the gavel, and everybody left, thinking that bovine had been decided. And it was decided, because in the paper the next day, a weekly paper, they said the town is now officially Bovine, Minnesota. Now, that's the origin of my town.
Okay.
And actually, it resembles a little bit of my real town. It used to be called Rich Prairie, and then there was a priest came by named Father Piers, and the people decided to honor him by changing the town. So I didn't come up with a whole new idea. I just came up with new names.
Okay. Roger, in just a few minutes, what I'd like you to do is give out your contact information, because if anybody has any questions or wants to learn more about you or your books, and especially when we get into the hobo novel aspect and what exactly that means, I'd like them to be able to get a hold of you. So we'll give people a chance to get a paper and pencil handy so they can write it down, but then I'll ask you if you'd be so kind as to give out a website or contact information. Would you do that?
Oh, I'll be very glad to do that, and hopefully I'll get some responses. I will return all responses with a free copy of one of my hobo novels.
Okay, great. We'll get to that. And should I forget, please remind me.
Oh, I will. I will.
Now, as you were writing your manuscript, your first manuscript, what was your goal? Did you want to just tell a story? Were you looking to make money with some combination? Did you want to get fame and fortune as an author? Where were you coming from, or what motivated you? Was it more of a hobby thing?
Well, money and fame and fortune had eluded me for the first 35 years of my career, so I saw no reason to pursue that at this point. call it just a hobby, it really was more than that. It was, I hate to say a drive, because every artist claims that, and I'm not that artisty in that sense. It was just something I wanted to do. And choosing to write about people pretty well decided what kind of genre I was going to write. There's no mystery about my people. You know, the only thing that's mystery is how they might react to a given thing. But there's no suspense other than the normal lifetime suspense. So my book automatically fell into the literary genre, which means they're character-driven, sometimes described as watching grass grow.
Okay.
The action can be kind of slow sometimes. But the characters are real, at least in the literary genre, according to that the genre. They are to be real characters with real motivations and working on conflicts that we normally experience in life and resolving or not resolving them, but having worked them through. And that's what my characters do. I had a babysitter. I think I can remember a five-year-old experience specifically with her, but she was a friend later on, too. And I think she inspired all of my books, at least all of my characters. She herself was a German immigrant who came over about the turn of the century when she was 7 years old, all by herself. She had a note pinned to her blouse telling where she was supposed to go, and it was written in German and English because she couldn't speak English. And somehow she made it across and to the railroad and to an uncle in my rural town. So she'd tell me stories like that, and they just intrigued me. The one story that triggered the first book I wrote, she supplied the information for it, but what had happened is I was 5 years old, too young to go to the country school, but it was always in my view because it was about a quarter of a mile up the hill. So one day I'd sneak away and went there at recess time and played with the kids while they were at recess. And they played a game called Pump, Pump, Pull Away, which means two rows of kids would line up and then one person would be elected to run through the ranks of the other kids. And when it came my turn to run through, you know, a little five-year-old didn't stand much chance about these kids were all the way up to the eighth grade. But I, for some reason, ran into the biggest kid there, and he fell down. And he got up and he said, boy, you are sure tough. He says, you can be on my team now. And that, you know, for a five-year-old, I believed it. You know, I believed that I really had done that.
Right.
So and every morning I'd see him walk by my house to get to the school early. So I asked my babysitter about that, and she said, "Oh, that's I'll use his stage name. That's Freddie. He goes to school early every day to start the fire in the schoolhouse, make things warm for the kids. He's an eighth grader." And then she told me about the boy. He was an orphan. His mother had passed away, and his mother's sister invited or brought him into her family, which was a common thing back in those days. This was back in the 30s, even before my time. And unfortunately, the mother, his adopted mother, also died very young, when he was still a very young child. So he was raised by his cousin, 16, 17-year-old girl. So she becomes a Thelma in my story. And she not only has to raise this boy, and this is part of it's true, not the Thelma, but the real person. And there were six adult men in her family besides the infant that she had to take care of. That's four brothers and a father and an uncle. So she was going to be potentially a great heroine in order to conquer all those things. So if you ask, I rambled on here, but you ask how what motivated my stories, and I can say this Mary was the gal who did this for me.
So she was the impetus behind the stuff that you wrote.
Yeah, at least she sort of alerted me to the people, and of course I knew all the other people that I've incorporated in one level or another, but she was the catalyst for it. Incidentally, she had a husband, too, who seemed to be older than she, and he was on his deathbed. My mother, we were very close neighbors, or just not close emotionally, but close in terms of distance. So she felt obligated to go take me there to say goodbye to him. Well, I can never remember saying hello to him, so I was maybe 8, 9, or 10 by that time. But I did go visit him with my parents, and I have a picture of him laying in bed, actually sitting up with a mirror. His wife was holding the mirror for him, and he was trimming his mustache. I thought, what a scenario! What is with this man? And then he spoke, kind of. Well, you could tell he was in pain, and he was having a tough time breathing and everything. And he said something about a clock, like a clock that's been wound up once or twice too often. And then a few weeks later, the hearse drove by our house, and my mother made me come in and bow my head and things because we knew what happened. But I had to make a story about him, so he became the character of my second book, a man who has a lot of mystery around him. And that's the title of that book is Neath the Crescent Moon.
Okay. When you were doing the manuscript, or again, we'll talk about your first one, when you had no prior experience, did you research the publishing end of it at all? I mean, did you, you know, think ahead to what you would do once the manuscript was completed?
Well, I knew time was against me because I've heard so many stories about beginning novelists being able to find an agent or a publisher. Yet I made an attempt at it. But a friend of mine, a writer friend of mine, suggested I go to a vanity press. And that's basically what I did. I had someone else publish. It's a form of self-publishing.
Right.
I had success selling the book, of course, because, well, I myself have 97 cousins on my father's side.
Holy mackerel.
I were from rural.
Wow.
So I figured I had 97 books sold, so I ordered 500. They went quite well, and I ordered another 500, and they floundered somewhat. But by that time, I was into my second book, and I realized that I was probably going to be stuck with self-publishing another time. I didn't have the energy, or wasn't sure if my book was good enough to. Since then, I've discovered it is, but at the time, I didn't know if it was quality enough to be picked up by a publisher. So I self-published a second one too. Now the third one, I'm going to do some agent work with.
Okay, the first two were the same publisher?
No, I decided that since I'm going to go to a vanity press, I may as well save some money and go through the total self-publishing.
Oh, you okay.
But I didn't do it all by myself. I hired a company, Mystic Publishing, obviously. I think you know them too.
Sure.
Here in Las Vegas, an up and growing company. But it's an a la carte kind of thing. You can buy their services at any level, and I just chose the minimum level because I wanted to do all the marketing myself. And
right. The
thing I didn't want to do was the creating the format. I'm not that handy with the computer to get it in the proper format to a printer.
That just for people who don't know, the Mystic Publishing is run by Joe Wilkins and Richard Droughty.
Yes.
They do an excellent job, don't they?
Oh, I've been very satisfied with them. The work is fantastic. They let you do as much or as little as you want. They'll help you in every step of the way, and the price is quite good.
Oh, let's get to your contact information. I said it would just be a minute. It's been about 10. So.
Okay. Oh, these people were standing with bated breath waiting with their pencils.
That's right. How
terrible of you. Well, it's Roger Starkamp. And the name is unique enough. You can type that into Google it, and you'll probably get my things coming up. But specifically, it's rogerstarkamp.com for the website. And it's rogerstarkamp.com/hoboblog for my blog. And I don't mind calls or emails. Email is roger@rogerstarkamp.com. You'll notice there's a lot. My name is in a lot of these.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I have a name that is not being used in the internet, so it's a very wonderful thing, a good opportunity for me. And my home phone number, as a matter of fact, I'll give you my cell number if anybody chooses to call. That's certainly all right.
Sure.
It's 651-260-6796.
Okay, so people now can reach you through your website, your blog, email, or by phone, right?
Yes, and anybody who chooses to call me, I'll see to it you get a free copy, a complimentary copy of at least one of my two hobo novels that are now on the road.
Now, when do you expect the next one to be out? It's close, right?
Oh, probably by fall, I would think. Because, like I said, I'm going to make some attempts at finding an agent, and if that does happen, then it won't happen for us. The time will be determined by someone else. It will be out of my hands.
Sure.
But if it doesn't happen, I got to get this lady on the road along with her two friends rather quickly.
Now, speaking of that, I want to get into marketing a little bit. You indicated that, in fact, when you went with Mystic Publishers, you took a minimal package because you wanted to do most, if not all, of the marketing yourself. What's your experience been in marketing, and how did you happen to get the hobo idea? And will you explain to us what the hobo novel is?
Yeah, that's quite easy to explain. I found my own publisher, my own printer, and I told him I think I could sell 1,000 copies. And he said, okay, but he said for almost the same price we can get you 1,500 because we're switching from the, at that number they can switch over to the offset printing rather than the print by demand. So I said, okay, give me 1,500 copies of each. You know, that number is so easy to say, but if you see 1,500 books on your front doorstep, you wonder what was wrong with your head when you did that. I have a pickup, and I had to make two pickup trips to the loading dock in order to bring that many books home. So obviously I had a problem in my hand that was one of supply and demand. I had a supply. So I realized that the first last 500 copies weren't that expensive. I'm going to put that into my marketing plan. I'm going to give away 500 copies. Well, if you don't have a medium to give or to interact with, how do you go about giving away books? It became a unique problem I had never even thought about. So that's where I had the idea. I've got to do something different than that. For some reason, the hobo novel came to me. If I can put the emphasis on the book, on the process, rather than on the book itself or even on me, then I can stand at airports and say, would you like a hobo novel? All you have to do is promise to give it away when you're done. And, of course, I've got a lot of friends here at the church. I live in Sun City, so it's a community. There's an awful lot of people here with grandchildren, children and grandchildren who fly in from all over, so they're willing to take a book with them. And through that process, I've so far given away 600 of these books.
Wow.
So I still have 400 left to go. Each book is coded with its own unique number. And on my website, I'd like people to check this. It's very impressive. I've got all 600 books listed and who the person who took that book originally and, if possible, where that book was intended to go. And inside of each cover is directions on how to go about passing this book on and, if possible, reporting back to me so I can put it on my hobonovel.com. I've been getting some real interesting responses.
I can imagine. Give us some examples.
Well, I got two pictures back so far. One person is holding a book against the statue of the Virgin in Santiago, Chile, to prove that he was there and said he found my book. And another person sent me a picture of a woman holding my book in Hong Kong Airport with the background so they knew that it was in the Hong Kong Airport. I got a call from a fellow in Houston who said he picked up my book at the was abandoned in the Minneapolis Airport, and he took it to Houston. He set it down, and somebody picked it up, said, is this your book? And he says, no. The guy looked at it and said, good, I'm going to take it to Hawaii with me. So that book got, I don't know the number on that one. I wish I had so I could tell the person who started that book out that I found their book. But the most interesting one, and I think I'm going to read you the little note the person sent me. Didn't send me the note alone. He sent me the entire book back. He said, dear Mr. Starkamp, I received your book at an airport in the U.S. I agreed to pass it on, but I cannot fulfill my promise, so I'm sending it back to you. Here's the negative part, but I want to share this anyhow because he was really upfront with his values. It is not a book I would read or pass on to others due to its sexual content. Minor note from the author. There is sex in it. It's very limited, but it has to do with incest, and that's a pretty taboo subject for a lot of people.
Sure.
Then he goes on to say, the idea of a hobo book is a wonderful idea, especially for those who are in airports. I wish you all the luck in continuing with this. And he sent me the book back, and I'm going to put that one back on the road again.
So you're getting worldwide exposure, aren't you?
Well, in a limited sense, but with 600 books, I would have expected more than I'm getting. One of the people that I work with at a used bookstore said, oh, you're not going to expect anything for 6 months. This is a long-term project. And I'm patient with that. I've got years. I don't care. This program is going to go on for years. I'm going to get my 1,000 books out there. And when I come up with a new book, I don't know if I'm going to be giving that one away. It gets a little expensive.
Sure.
But in every book I sell after that, I'm going to give the option with a discount if they agree to give the book, put the book on the road when they're done with it.
Now, did you come up with this idea yourself, or was it something?
Well, I came up with the idea, but when I look back at it, there's a lot of examples of it. If you see a dollar bill sometimes with writing on it, Washington.com or something, you're supposed to track that dollar bill down. And a message in a bottle is pretty common. There's even a movie about that where people put messages and years later they're discovered.
Right.
So there were prototypes for the idea, but putting it into a book, I think, was originally, well, no, it's not originally. I had it originally, but I understand now there's another company that does this for anybody who wants to report any book.
Wow.
But I wasn't aware of that when I did this.
So you're a pioneer.
Well, I hope so. At least I hope this idea is perhaps the most original one I've had. I'm not a terribly creative person when it comes to things like that, but I hope that this would probably be as significant, perhaps even as significant as my writing.
Now, let me ask you, Roger, in addition to obviously, you know, finding out where the books are ending up and who's seeing them, and, you know, or actually not ending up, but their history after they leave your hands,
mm-hmm.
Will this kind of exposure, you think, result in sales? Are sales a part of the agenda, or is it just mainly to see where the books go?
Well, I guess I'm more interested. My primary interest was to get my name out there. And if
right.
that does result in sales, I think of this conversation we're having right now as perhaps more interesting based on the fact that I did more than just write a couple of books.
Oh, sure.
So that kind of thing, I think. I even changed my name, the title on my website, to hobonovel.com rather than Roger Starkamp, although both will get you there. But I feel people are more ready to recognize Hobo Novel than they would my name at this point.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think if I ever would have been able to come up with such an idea. I don't think I would have. So my hat's off to you.
Well, thank you.
You thought of something this unique. And like you say, you were hoping with 600 out to have more responses, but you also said you were told this is a long project,
right?
A long-term deal. So, and the responses, you know, some of them that you mentioned certainly are interesting. You got to be a little bit of a thrill.
And I'm getting a lot more than those. Those are the ones I picked out were long-distance responses.
Right.
I'm getting a lot of people who tell me, they see me, my friends say, hey, your book just went to such and such a place. And I say, hey, give me a name and I'll put it on the website.
Do the people who are contacting you, they probably get a little bit of a charge out of that, don't they?
I haven't come across anybody who says, boy, this is stupid.
Yeah.
Of course, they probably wouldn't talk to me about that. Although I admire this fellow for telling me that it wasn't something he could pass on, but he had the integrity not just to discard the book. You know,
right.
He sent it back to me. And he paid euros, I think, like 8 or 10 euros to get the book back to me. So I admire him.
Yeah, you got to respect that.
I certainly do.
Roger, I don't know these shows. I don't know where the time goes. We're down to about 30 seconds already. I want to thank you for coming on and discussing your writing and the hobo novel concept with us. And I'd also like to have you back on when your next book comes out.
Well, I would enjoy that very much, yes.
Update.
Then I should tell.
You can and update us on, you know, if any more responses on your first two about where they've been, where they're going.
Yes, and if anybody's curious, of course, you can check. I keep it up every month. I update the data every month. So,
Okay, Roger, thanks again, and the best of luck.
All right, Denny, thank you.
Keep in touch.
Yeah, will do. I'll promote this baby for you.
Okay, thanks, Roger.
All right, Denny, bye.
Bye-bye. Roger Storkamp, an author and unique marketing exposure system, the Hobo Novel. Thanks again to Roger, and until next time, have a great day.